How's it going, everybody, and welcome to episode number 51 of Master My Garden Podcast. Now, this week's episode, obviously, it's going out on today, which is the 8th of January, and it's the time of year where gardeners start thinking about, you know, getting going, getting growing for the season ahead. And it's also at this time of the year when people start to come up with ways of extending their season, and one of the best ways to do that is to have your own greenhouse. So I'm joined today by Brendan Dial from Deplant Horticulture, and Deplant Horticulture are a polytunnel expert company in Ireland, and they manufacture and install greenhouses, I think pretty much around the country, but Brendan will tell us a bit about that in a moment. But as I say, it's the time of year where people start considering, you know, getting themselves a greenhouse, and there's three main types. There's polytunnels, glass houses, and polycarbonate houses. And so we're going to cover all of those. We'll talk about sort of the pros and cons of each. And, you know, we'll get into a little bit more detail maybe on the polytunnel part of it, but we'll go through the pros and cons of each. And hopefully at the end of it all, you'll be able to make an informed decision as to which one best suits your garden. So as I say, it's Brendan Dial, Deplant Horticulture. And Brendan, you're very, very welcome to Master My Garden Podcast.
Thanks very much, John. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so we've spoken a little bit about it before we started recording, and obviously this episode is going out on the 8th of January, and it's a time when people start to, as I say, consider getting themselves a greenhouse, and it's really an ideal time because greenhouses, they give somebody, particularly when you're in, you know, Ireland and the UK, which a lot of my listeners are, in other parts of the world, you know, you might be lucky enough to have a climate that allows you to grow for 10 or 11 months of the year. But here in Ireland and in the UK, a greenhouse is a super way of extending the season. Isn't that kind of, you know, the biggest thing for your customers?
Yeah, I suppose extending the season is the main thing. Like, you can grow right through into the winter, like if you program a range of crops, you know, and get your schedule right. You will get all year round growth, and now you won't get anything magic happening in the winter, but you will get substantially more than you would outside, you know. And in some cases, it just can't be done outside, and it can be done inside. So that's the main thing.
It allows you to get started earlier, and then while, as you say, nothing magic will happen in the winter time because we won't have the heat and the light that plants need, but at the same time, you can still grow, you know, some brassicas, some salad leaf crops and other things. So you can pretty much grow 12 months of the year. The other massive advantage of a greenhouse of any type is that you can grow so many more different types of vegetables, different types of flowers and so on. So I'm thinking, you know, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, aubergines, chili peppers, all of that sort of thing, realistically in Ireland and the UK anyway. I know some areas might be a little bit luckier with weather, but for the most part, you can't do that without, you know, sort of a greenhouse or some sort of protected covering.
No, like if you're to depend on an Irish summer, you're probably going to be disappointed. So, you know, as grads outdoor stuff, I know there's varieties of tomatoes and that will be, you know, specifically bred for outdoor production, but it's by and large, it's pretty unsuccessful. You know, so you know, it does allow you that comfort. Like, and if you grow them right and handle them right, you know you'll have fairly decent crops of all of those range of vegetables that you mentioned.
For sure, and of course you can get sown a bit earlier as well. And then for somebody who's, you know, who's maybe not into the grow your own side of it, but is into the ornamentals, it's a great way of, you know, so you can have sort of tender plants that you can raise, get them going early in the tunnel or the glasshouse, and then move them out for the summer and then bring them back in for a bit of protection in the winter time. So I'm thinking things like cannas and banana plants and all that sort of thing. And, you know, it gives people that ability to grow tender plants in an environment where they won't naturally grow. So, you know, whether you have a sort of grow your own garden or a ornamental garden, you know, glass house or greenhouse of any sort is a good investment. So when we talk about greenhouses, we're really talking about three types, and polytunnels obviously being your specialist area because that's what your company Deplant does. You manufacture and assemble them. but also glass houses and polycarbonate houses. So maybe we'll go through the sort of pros and cons of each to allow somebody who's thinking of buying a greenhouse to kind of choose the right one. And as I say, because it's your area of expertise, we might just start with polytunnels. So I suppose in an overall sense, polytunnels are by far the most cost-effective way of having a greenhouse, because you can have a substantial size greenhouse for kind of similar money to what you'll pay for a small glass house. Isn't that kind of a good starting point?
It would be, yeah, yeah. I suppose that you get more bang for your buck. Like, yeah, you'll cover a lot more ground with palatine for the same money as you would, you know, a smaller area in glass. That's the main thing. And I suppose, you know, I always go back to comparing to commercial ventures, and you know, usually if you look at what's done commercially and reduce that and scale, that's going to be cost effective. You know, and
yes.
You know, if you look at strawberry growers and veg growers around the country, like, it's predominantly polythene. You know, it's really only, you really only get into glass where you have a much more expensive crop. You know that the returns will justify it. But from an economics point of view, you know, polythene seems to be the thing. And my background is growing as well. Like, I'm first and foremost, I'm a horticulture and propagation would be my thing. And you know, that's where we came from, and that's what has worked for us over the years. Like,
so in terms of polythene tunnels, then, so for, you know, the home gardener as such, essentially you're talking about aluminium hoops and a polythene cover that goes from side to side. And that polythene can be either dug into the ground on the side or fixed to a cladding rail.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I'd say, I just a little correction there, that the vast majority of polytunnels, if not all of them, would be made from galvanized steel. So it's galvanized steel tubing.
Oh, yeah. Galvanized steel, sorry.
And
So it's a heavier...
It's a heavier structure. Like, you'll get a bigger span, you know, in a single hoop than possibly with aluminium. But aluminium would be a very expensive product, like, and it would be in some of the smaller, being in the glass houses, all right. Like, it makes a light, strong frame, but no, a galvanized steel would be predominantly the use for polytunnels, and preferably galvanized inside and outside, because it's a kind of a damp, wet environment continually, like, so you need good protection for that steel, but that seems to work well.
Okay, and the polythene itself, so typically, now I know on all of the polythene tunnel company's website, you know, you're talking about recommendation that a sheet is lasting, is it 5 to 7 years roughly recommendation is?
The guaranteed lifespan on polythene, and when we say guaranteed, it's generally a UV degradation guarantee. It's not guaranteed against storm damage or, you know, any other kind of physical damage. You know, the only thing a manufacturer can stand over is how long it'll last without UV light breaking it down. So they're from pretty much 3, 4, 5 years would be the norm. Like, and there is some of the new polythenes coming out that'll be up to 7 or 8 years.
So they'll have a warranty for 7 or 8 years against UV UV breakdown.
Yeah, that's not far down the line now. I'd say that probably within the next 12 months that we'll probably move to 7 year, you know, 7, 8 year warranty.
Yeah. Now, I suppose, and this is speaking from my experience, I have a polytunnel which I covered. Was it covered last spring? No, it was covered in the spring of 2019.
Yeah.
And actually, that cover was on it, believe it or not, for 17 years.
Yeah.
Without any issues. Now, I know that's probably not the norm, but it is true to say that you can get longer than the 5 to 7 years out of it.
Our 5 year polythene, we would say there's an expected lifespan of 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But there'd be a couple of things like that would make a difference there. Like, the situation that the tunnel is in, is it well sheltered, and, you know, or is it out in the open? The other thing is probably more important than anything is that the polythene is tight everywhere. Even if plastic can flutter in the wind, that'll cause degradation, it'll cause it to break down. If you imagine a piece of polythene being like a little piece of thin metal, and if you wanted to break a piece of thin metal or wire, you'd bend it back and forward at the one point often enough and it'd break. The polythene is the same as that. So if it moves, especially you'd see along the side of tunnels where there was a crease originally in the polythene. And you'll see that running down the side of a tunnel. Now, if the plastic is loose enough to move at that point, it'll be like a hinge, bend back and forward. Not much. Now, you mightn't even see it much, but it just if it's not taut, it will break at that point, and it'll look like somebody ran a knife along it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is hugely important, is that the polythene is so tight. When you touch off it or tip your fingers off it, it should almost be making a noise like a drum.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
That's how tight it should be. And the types of polythene now that's being used, so there's different ones. We spoke the other day, one of them is called thermic, and that basically keeps in some heat that radiates from the ground. Isn't that essentially what that
it
does?
It is, yeah. It reflects back in infrared heat. So if you have, when you take a still, clear night, you get what's called radiation frost. So that's the UV or the infrared light or infrared heat leaving the earth, like, and it just travels straight up in space.
Yeah.
So the thermic properties in the polythene reflect that back in, and it's quite a lot. Like it's something over 90% of your infrared heat is reflected back. Like, so it's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now it's not magic. Like, that won't mean that you'll have a hot tunnel at night. It means that you might have a 2 to 4 degree advantage
over outside
that. Yeah, now that could be the difference between your plants being dead and not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, that'd be a big difference down around freezing point. That'd be a huge variance to have. So, And in terms of, so all the sheets now are UV stable. Some of them have the thermic properties. Is there anything else about the sheets that people should look out for that is important?
I suppose the anti-condensation is an important thing, and almost all have that now as well.
Yeah. And actually, on that, isn't it true that there's an inside to the sheet and an outside, and the inside holds that anti-drip property?
Yeah. It's a microfilm that's put on the inside of the polythene. It's put on one side of the polythene, so you have to keep that to the inside. And what happens is when the condensation or fog or water droplet starts to form on the polythene, it causes it to disperse into a film. So it doesn't create a tiny micro bubble or even a big water droplet. Like, you know, the small droplets become bigger droplets and then drip.
Yeah.
So it prevents that. Now it does two things as well as the obvious thing of not having drips in your tunnel. It allows more light in. So you get first thing in the morning when the first sun hits the tunnel, and it's after a cool night, condensation will form. And if that doesn't run into a clear film, it'll actually create a small shade.
Okay. So slightly diffuses the sun.
It diffuses the sun, but it actually cuts down the amount of light. So it reflects a certain amount of it back out.
Okay.
So it doesn't get through into the house. So you'd lose a percentage of early morning sun. And so that's an important quality. And I'll explain more later on. We'll probably talk about clean and polythene later, and I'll throw in a little fact there how important light is.
So if somebody gets the sheet, that is an important point, and it will be, like, the sheet, for all the world, looks the same inside and out, but it will be written on or printed on the sheet inside, and that needs to go on.
It will tell you at some point that it's the internal side.
Yeah.
But as a rule of thumb, you should be able to read the print from the inside of the polythene.
Yeah.
So if you're standing in the tunnel, you should be able to read that print from the inside. If it's mirror image, it's on backwards.
Perfect. In terms of ventilation, polytunnels, obviously we've said there that condensation can build up on the top. Ventilation is really important. Now, obviously, if you've a relatively small tunnel, the end door or the two end doors might be sufficient. But at what size do you recommend that people add additional vents, as in a side vent or, you know?
I would say in most cases, put as much bent as you can in the gable lens, like, and the bigger you go, like if you're kind of going 40, 50 foot long with a tunnel, maybe have double doors in it. If your tunnel is wide enough, maybe put a panel beside the doors as well that you can vent.
Okay.
You know, put a netting in it or put a removable panel or something like that. It's possible to put on really big tunnels, it's possible to vent down the side with netting. So you stop your polythene, say, maybe 2 or 3 foot from the ground,
yeah,
and then you'd fix a netting panel down underneath it. And then you can use, after that, you can use a roll-up cover on that.
Yeah.
My experience is that anybody kind of in a domestic situation that use net sides in a polythene, in a polytunnel, unless they have some way of closing it efficiently, would be disappointed with how cold it is on ongoing basis. Like,
yeah.
So it's great in the really hot weather in the summer when you really need it. But when you don't need it, then it tends to be more of a nuisance than the value that you're expecting from it.
Okay, so your house is just that bit too cold if it's completely vented,
yes,
and no way,
yes,
of sealing the back,
yeah,
up.
Now if you were growing trees or shrubs or nursery stock or something like that, it'd be ideal because they'll love that sort of condition. But, you know, for most of your veg in the winter, when you're trying to keep as much heat as possible, a bit of vent in the gable ends tends to be enough. Like, you're trying to get a balance between ventilation and keeping a little bit of heat in it, you know, and not letting the cold wind through it. Like,
yeah.
So it's possible to do it, and it's not difficult to do the side ventilation in it, but I would think hard on it before I go that route, say, for most domestic purposes.
Okay. So your tips are kind of to vent the ends as much as possible, and unless you really need to, you know, stay away from the side vents for domestic use.
Yeah. Because the ends are much easier to close up as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you can tack a bit of plastic over them over the net for the winter, if you stick it on the outside, you can put it on with a staple gun, and in most cases, it'll stay on all winter.
Yeah.
You know, as a temporary fix, and then whip it off again in the summer.
Yeah. Okay, and obviously we've said the polytunnels give you the kind of most bang for your buck, and then if realistically, then once you have the structure, all you're doing then if you're very lucky, every 10, 12 years, you're changing your plastic, essentially, or your polythene sheet. That's it. Like, there is no other kind of costs on it after that. If we kind of just look at glass houses then for a minute. So I suppose glass houses, by their nature, they're a little bit more expensive because obviously glass is quite expensive. And then in terms of for every, we'd say, €1,000 spent, you will get a lot smaller glass house than you will polytunnel. But glass does have some advantages in that it's easier to heat than a polytunnel, especially for young plants, or if you're doing, you know, sort of heated cuttings or heated seedlings, anything like that. The glass house will hold heat a little bit better. Isn't that true to say?
It will do, yeah.
I suppose then another obvious advantage of a glass house in terms of aesthetics, like polytunnels, they're not ugly, but they're not the most gorgeous looking thing in the garden, whereas some of the fancy glass houses that can be, you know, powder coated black or powder coated green and have fancy eaves and gutters and things on it can look, you know, very attractive, and you have these orangeries and different things like that. So from an aesthetics point of view, glass houses probably do look quite good.
Yeah, I would imagine this aesthetics is probably the number one choice.
Yeah.
Kind of far going for glass. You know, you can get even the cheapest of glass houses are reasonable looking.
Yeah.
And you know, and you can get very, very handsome looking glass houses, and you know, something like, there'll be times where people won't want to put a polytunnel beside their house or in front of their house, and that might be the only place to have for it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas glass house will fit in nicely there.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you say, some of the, you can get them, like most of them are nice looking, but there is some really slick looking ones, and obviously there's really beautiful, quite expensive, but really beautiful cedar timber ones, and you know, the powder coated black and the powder coated green are really nice looking as well.
That's right. Yeah.
You have a couple of glazing options then, obviously. So you have horticulture glass, which essentially is standard glass really, and it breaks pretty much the same way as a window would break. So it'll break into shards. And
yes.
Then you have toughened glass, which essentially isn't any tougher, but that's what they call it, is toughened glass. It will break probably as easily as horticultural glass, but the difference is it breaks the same way as a windshield of a car. So it breaks into little small pieces. So
right.
It gives you that
so it's more
safety.
It's more of a safety aspect.
It's a safety aspect, yeah. But they do call it toughened glass, but I don't personally don't find it any tougher. You know, it will break still quite easily. And then obviously you can get a glasshouse frame that has polycarbonate panels as well. So there's options there. Glasshouses, they're tricky enough to put up as well. Speaking from experience, I have put together some, you know, fairly basic 6x8 glasshouses in my time, and it's pretty much a full day job for two people that kind of know roughly what they're at. There's a lot of parts, a lot of nuts, a lot of bolts. So I think, to be fair, and we'll talk about it again when we come back to D-Plant later on, I think buying a greenhouse, I would nearly always say to somebody, go for the installed version, because while you might think you're saving, you know, a couple of €100, by the time you've it done, you'll wish you had you know, spent the extra bit and got somebody else to put it up, somebody who knows what they're at, because it can be quite frustrating. But aesthetics obviously being the number one sort of benefit of glass houses, and then it does hold the heat a little bit better than the polythene when you're doing seedlings. And if you want to run a heater of any sort in it, it does hold the heat a little bit better. Isn't that true?
It does, yeah. And I assume that if you're willing to put the budget into it, you probably get double glazed panels, you know, or at least double glazed in the roof.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's options like that out there, but
I'm sure there is. Actually, I've never seen a double glazed one, to be honest. But they do. The sort of 4 mil toughened glass and horticultural glass, they hold the heat a hell of a lot better than, say, polythene. Like a polytunnel, if you're heating it, really all you're doing is just it's frost prevention rather than heating. But you can actually heat a glass house as such.
The ventilation in a glass house is going to be quite good as well, because you have all these panes of glass that are lapped over, so there'll be a very gentle air movement between those. You know, so your overall in your house you'll have an air change at a slow rate.
And for the most part, they have a window up top as well that you can actually add an auto vent to. So if it hits a certain temperature, it will automatically open. So it is good from that point of view. I suppose the other thing is there's not a huge, certainly in the Irish market, and I know certainly in the UK as well, there fitters for glass houses are becoming a little bit scarce as well. I know in Ireland there's only a couple really doing fittings, so it can be quite hard to get somebody to do that. But I'm trying to think that other than that, glass houses are a solid investment. And one thing about them, if you go back, like there is some of the original sort of the standard 6x8 glass houses that you would see in gardens, and they're actually in position now for, you know, 45, 50 years. That was kind of when they started to come on the scene. And so there's great longevity in them as well. And unless you have somebody kicking a football in the garden or hitting it with a slitter or a hurl, you're going to get a long time out of a glass house as well. So there's great longevity, even though your initial spend is quite high.
The only thing I'd say in relation to that is like everything, like there's really cheap models on the market, and there's you know medium budget, and there's, you know, expensive ones. But I would say if you're investing in a glass house, you know, don't be taken by the really cheap ones, because I've seen it time after time where people, you know, especially people who buy polytunnels, and say, I want to buy a cheap glass house, and it just kept breaking glass.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a good strong structure, it'll break glass on you.
Yeah.
Wind, it'll hit it. A gust of wind hits it and it shakes it and it'll break glass. And if you're going to spend a lot of money replacing glass, you may as well have had a good one in the start. Yeah. So I always tell people, right, we get called all the time looking for glass houses, because there may be an assumption when we go, when we have polytunnels that we'd have glass as well. And I would send them on to a good supplier. I'd say, look, at buy a good one.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the same is true whether you're talking about polytunnel or glasshouse. Even the polytunnels, like you can get the pop-up ones now that literally you put together in half an hour. They all come in a little small box with 100 pieces in it. And you look at it and you think...
There's some tunnels out there and they have such a poor cover on them. You know, they're very light structure and start with, but they have such a poor cover on them that there's no UV inhibitor. And we've seen as little as a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, before they'd fall apart in 2 years. You know, I've seen very few of those ones getting more than 2 years.
Yeah. And I think they're like those little small pop-up ones that I'm talking about, they're probably fine for somebody that, you know, is working in a really small space and they just want to get some small plants started early in the year. But if you're thinking of growing and you're, particularly if you're in the countryside or you're in any way exposed spot, you really are, even though there might be only 79 or 99 or 129 or whatever they are, you're really wasting your money, because the amount of times that I see them and they're blown over the ditch or they fall over or they're just not good quality. So I think if you're considering, you're better off to go quality, whether it's glass, polytunnel or whatever it is. And if the budget doesn't allow it this year, I would sit back and wait until next year, because buying a cheap one is money wasted, really.
It is. And the only thing that I've heard that was even approaching making sense was somebody said to me that they bought one of these little tunnels because they weren't sure whether they were going to be into it or not. So it was a kind of
a trial
run for 100 quid. Yeah. Maybe that's the only thing that I could see that out there that would make sense.
Yeah. I suppose that does make sense, you know.
Try it out as a tester in the gardening world and see if they like it, and then they would invest in something decent.
Yeah, for sure. So we've talked about polytunnels, and we'll come back to them in a minute, and glass houses. And the other one that's getting more popular, I guess, is polycarbonate houses of different types. And I suppose it's what we were saying off air. When you look at, and you mentioned it at the start of this episode, when you look at what's being done commercially, that's probably a good route to follow. So polytunnels are widely used commercially, so are glass houses, but polycarbonate, not so much. Now, I know polycarbonate and all that type of plastic products are increasing in quality over the years, so they're probably getting better all of the time.
Yeah. I'd say that there's a kind of a place for the polycarbonate in the market, and it falls somewhere between the polytunnel and the
glasshouse.
Polytunnel and the glasshouse.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's a kind of an unproven product, like, because it's not there very, very long. Like, I'm not saying it won't last.
Yeah.
But it's been around since the 1950s, in terms of the product, polycarbonate has been around since the 1950s, but it hasn't been used commercially on large scale in horticulture.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe just in some in gable ends and window panels and stuff like that, or door panels, but other than that. But it does make quite a nice looking polytunnel.
Yeah, so that's what you're saying. It kind of sits between the polytunnel and the glasshouse. So maybe if somebody doesn't have the budget of a full glasshouse, or you know, a good high end glasshouse, then polycarbonate is aesthetically good. Like it looks quite good. Looks from a distance, actually, you probably wouldn't tell a huge, you know, wouldn't tell it apart from a glasshouse. So it has that look, but obviously it's not as expensive. It's lighter to move around, probably slightly easier to put together. There's less risk with breaking a panel, putting it up. So it would have advantages. Okay. In terms of growing, I'm not so sure because I don't know. But I would assume it probably grows crops quite well.
It's very popular. We have a polytunnel group, and quite a lot of members on it. And there's a fair few people who have polycarbonate houses, and they seem to be get on fairly well with them.
Yeah.
So it's ground conditions seem to be reasonable enough.
Yeah. So it's probably a good option as well. As I say, I don't personally have any experience with polycarbonate, but But yeah, the glass and the polytunnel do. So
yeah,
you mentioned earlier on then about polytunnels and cleaning them.
Yes.
So
I always quote this to people who ask me if it's important to have polythene clean or glass clean or any other grown medium clean. An old lecturer when I was in college said to us one day that if you can see dirt on glass, you're losing about 10% light. And he said on a commercial scale, if you're losing 10% light, you're probably losing about 10% yield.
Right.
So it doesn't take much for you to think about, you know, when you'd see a dirty green polytunnel with algae growing on it, like for a number of years, what the difference would be for the light transmission in that compared to if you cleaned it.
Yeah, it should be huge. A huge variance in it.
You could be losing if you can see a tunnel that looks green, you know, that has a green layer on it almost, like, and it does develop over a number of years, especially if you're near trees or if you're near an area which would have a lot of air pollution and dust and stuff like that, because it does lodge on the plastic and then that creates an anchor for algae to grow.
Yeah.
But if you clean that, like, you could probably increase your light by about 30%.
Yeah. What, have you any tips for cleaning it? I know what I do, but I'd like to hear your tip.
I have, actually, and we're going to do a video on cleaning because I have a really manky one that needs cleaning and we're going to make a video of that now, maybe over Christmas. So it might go out on Facebook and on the polytunnel group there shortly after this goes out. But a nice, wet, damp, drizzly day when the algae is soft.
Yeah.
That's the first thing, so that you don't have to scrub too hard. It's not for the amount of work you have to put in it, but just for the sake of not damaging polythene. So soapy water and a soft brush, you get the sides. A drop of Milton in the water will help to kill the algae and it'll help prevent it from coming back, like, because there'll be also microscopic traces of it left behind and that'll regrow at some stage.
Okay.
So it'll reduce that. Now, it's not magic. It won't fix it forever, but it'll help prolong the cleanness. So you do the sides handy enough with a soft brush and a hose. You know, get the soapy water up on it and rub it into it and then scrub it off and hose it down. The top is the bit that always worries people. What we use here is a length of green shade netting.
Okay.
And we tie some ropes to the corners of it. You get one or two people on either side of the tunnel and saw it back and forward across the top with plenty of soapy water thrown up on it.
Right. Very.
And it's like a pot scrub.
Yeah.
It's the access that you have. And you can work up and down the tunnel until you haul all the dirt off. It makes it handy, but you do need at least two people to do it.
Yeah, well, actually, what I do is something similar. I use frost fleece. So I get a length of frost fleece and dip it into, obviously you soften it first, as you said, if do it on a wet day or spray it beforehand and soften it first.
Yeah.
And then dip it in a big bucket of water, a big barrel of water, get it over the roof, and then one person on each side and just over and back. It's actually not hard to get off, and I find that the...
No, it's not. No, it's just a matter of doing it. It's been out of reach, I suppose, is most.
Yeah. I find the frost fleece good because it's really gentle on the sheet then as well, and that's what I've done. But similar to what you're at,
I think a little drop of bleach or Milton. I think, I don't know if you're an organic grower now, is that against the rules? But that worked well. But I'm sure there's products there that, you know, bread soda or something like that, that would probably do a similar job.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Main thing is that you hose it off, make sure it's hosed off as you go, because if you leave it for any length of time, all of that kind of loose slop that you've loosened up as you scrubbed along will start to dry into it and won't hose off it. So make sure the minute it's soft and loose and it hose it down.
Okay. That's a good tip. As we sort of start to get to the end, any other tips that might help somebody choose between, you know, what's the correct greenhouse for them?
Not one sound like the salesman, but I've never come across anybody that came back and said that they bought a greenhouse that was too small or that was too big. It's always too small. So go with whatever type you go for, go as for as big as you think you can manage initially, because okay. if you're going to be into it, it'll never be enough. And if you're not going to yeah. be into it, it doesn't matter in the first place, because whatever space you have will be too much. So,
yeah. I've never heard that one before, but it makes perfect sense to me, because when I think of anybody who has a glass house or a polytunnel, you know, on a in a sort of a garden situation, they are jam-packed.
They're always crammed, yeah.
Which suggests to me that they'd love to have a bit more space, or that they, if they had a bit more space, they'd probably fill it as well. So, that probably makes sense. So if you think you're going to need a 6x8 or a 10 foot by 15 foot, and the budget allows it and you have the space to do it, go a slight bit bigger.
Yeah.
Good tip.
The other tip I give coming to the end of this now is that a stitch in time saves 9. Always have a roll of repair tape or something. If you're stuck in an emergency, most co-ops or farm shops out in the country will have they'll have black silage repair tape. It looks awful on a tunnel, but if you have an emergency and you don't have clear all-weather tape, that'll do a job.
Yeah.
A little small tear that's only 6 inches long tonight could be 18 inches long tomorrow after a storm, and it could be after the next storm, it could be gone. So,
So essentially, if you get any sort of a hole or a tear or a mark on it,
yeah, patch them up.
Stick the repair tape on it straight away.
It could be a 6-inch tear in it for 6 months or a year. But when they start to go, they're exponential. You could get a long time of a small tear, and the next thing it's within a few nights it goes unknowns to, because you haven't been watching it. But watch the weather forecast. You know, we would take a walk around the greenhouses here and check doors and hinges and bolts and tears and stuff like that. Even on the big tunnels, I'd walk the gutters on them just to make sure everything was okay if there was a big storm coming. Much easier to do a patchwork. A little patch before it happened.
Do a complete recover.
Exactly, yeah.
And definitely, as I said earlier, I had a tunnel. Now, it wasn't a big one, but I had that cover for 17 years. And literally, if there was, you know, whether it was the door that got a little bit damaged, or whether it was, you know, if you let the spade fall against it on the inside or whatever it was, the tiniest little mark or tear on it, I straight away taped it up.
Yeah.
And as I say, I got 17 years out of it. So
it does pay dividends.
Definitely worth keeping it right.
You're not like, we'd hear stories regularly about people getting long lives out of polythene. We changed one here recently on a commercial tunnel that was 19.
Right.
You know, and that's purely from just, you know, regular checking on it. And another thing as well, if there's a storm, close up a tunnel. Don't, this thing about leaving both ends open, you know, fully closed. Tie it with a rope or put a screw in it, and whatever you have to do to keep it closed for that storm.
Yeah. Yeah, I often see that as well, that people say open it on both ends, let the wind blow through, and that's not the right thing to do, because it goes in and up and
it'll still
pushes
put
up
much more pressure on the house
underneath
than it would be if it was closed up. Now, if you lost the door off it, if the door came off it in a storm, the best thing to do then is open the other door. That is the only situation that I would recommend that.
Yeah. Just a final question, just thinking offhand, and you sort of talked about it earlier on. I've often been asked, can you get sunburn if you're in a polytunnel? And I know that the plastic has UV inhibitor. Is it inhibitor in it?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Now, the UV inhibitor doesn't protect you from sunburn, even though it's UV light that sunburns you. UV inhibitor protects the plastic from degrading because
from breaking
of it,
down.
Yeah. Of course, there is two types of plastic. There's UV open and UV closed.
Right.
So, which is a different thing than UV protected. Now, UV closed, it's actually the one we would generally use. It blocks most of the UV light from traveling through the plastic. And the advantage in it, horticultural advantage in this is that there's lots of insects like aphids and greenfly and red spiders and stuff like that see in UV light. So it does inhibit their movement if you have a UV closed palatine. So it's quite popular with organic growers. But the, one of the nice side effects of it is that you can't get burnt in it, or you get very little burn in it. So
That's something that's that people should be watching out for then as well.
Like we would have supplied some creches and preschools and stuff like that with tunnels and palatine for tunnels that, you know, where they'd have kids playing in them, and you know they, that would be a big factor for them, is to have UV closed palatine.
Yeah. Okay, so we've kind of covered off most things there now. Polytunnels, as we've said, they give you probably the best bang for your buck.
Yeah.
In terms of growing conditions, polytunnels, glasshouses, generally the same, although glasshouses, you can heat them a little bit easier than a polytunnel. Glasshouses probably, for somebody who's looking for, from an aesthetic point of view, glasshouses probably that little bit more attractive.
Yeah.
And then polycarbonate, a sort of a nice fit in between polytunnel and glasshouse. Still, well, to my eyes, a little bit unproven, because I just don't have experience with them as such in terms of growing. So yeah, they're certainly cost effective. They do look well. I'm sure they grow fine, but I just don't have personal experience on it. So
yeah,
you know, that sort of gives the pros and the cons. And
sorry, there is one more property there on polythene that we didn't hit. I'll just mention it, and there's light diffusion and clear.
Okay.
And the clear polythenes tend to be just the bog standard one, and light diffusion, I think almost every commercial grower that would use polythene would use light diffused. So it's a property, a process the polythene is put through where as light travels through it, it disperses it. So it doesn't reduce the amount of light, but it cuts down on direct sunlight. So it cuts down on scorch, which helps with, you know, with propagation of seedlings and cuttings and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't get that severe sunness. It's kind of like the difference between an ordinary lamp and a fluorescent light. You know,
to look at those two, then essentially it's one of them is crystal clear and the other one is, I won't call it milky, but slightly opaque, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the way I describe it is if the polythene is diffused, if there was somebody in the tunnel, you'd know there was somebody in there, but you might not know who it was.
All right.
The clear one would be clear as glass almost.
Okay, yeah. That's a good way of describing it, yeah.
Yeah.
So as I said earlier, we've given an overview there, and I think an unbiased one, but your company does specialize in polytunnels. So maybe tell us a little bit about D-Plant and what you guys do.
Okay, well, I'm my background is, like I said earlier on, is commercial horticulture and propagation. And I suppose almost as soon as I started in the nursery business, I started making polytunnels, and we started for making them initially for ourselves and then for a few other growers. And then that kind of evolved into a full-scale engineering company where we make a whole range of polytunnels for every type of market. We're based in Wexford. I have over 30 years experience between growing and between manufacturing tunnels. And we cover nationwide. We do supply only, and we do supply and fit.
Okay.
The one thing I'll say at the minute, because I suppose the COVID-19 has brought on a lot of interest in homegrown veg and food security, and people just having time on their hands as well. So, you know, the market has exploded in the last 12 months. And
So you're looking at longer lead times.
There's much longer lead times on it. I think it seems to me that all the greenhouse manufacturers out there have to, like anybody worth their salt, seems to have huge backlogs.
That's definitely across the market. That backlog is across the market. So
if you're
thinking of either polytunnel, glasshouse, or whatever it is, you know, lead times are a little bit extended at the moment. But check out what you're interested in, and check out the companies that you're talking to, and find out what their current lead times are. But they are extended, all right, for sure.
So I'd say, the spring is coming. We're looking January straight in the face. So that's the time people are going to be thinking of doing things. So, maybe maybe start making the inquiries now and see what this lead time are. I'd say in a lot of cases this year, people are not going to get tunnels or greenhouses fitted in time to start the growing season. So now the other thing is with polytunnels is, you know they're also available as self-assembly. And, you know, I know you said earlier on that, you know, it's always better to get professionals to do it. But if you're not, if that's not an option, you know, self-assembly is an option. There's a good video tutorial on our website, from dplant.ie, and it'll be on the menu under polytunnels and go to polytunnel assembly. And that's from start to finish. That was condensed into about 20 minutes, but from start to finish, it's how you mark out, put up, and cover a polytunnel, and all the little tips and tricks are in it.
To be fair, polytunnels are a lot easier to put up than a glasshouse.
Well, they're definitely a lot more forgiving anyway, that's for sure. You know, you get away with sites not being dead level and not being dead square and all like that. Now, I'm not saying to throw the marks out on the ground or anything, but you will have much more leeway than you will with most other products.
And a glasshouse, if you have the bar turned the wrong way and, you know, the groove on for receiving the glass turned the wrong way or anything like that, it's a nightmare.
You just have to redo it.
Speaking from experience.
So
you've mentioned your website. Where else? I know you have a group now, a Facebook group now. Tell us a bit about that.
There's a Facebook group we set up a couple of years ago called Irish Polytunnels. There's almost 12,000 members on it now, and that has exploded over the last 12 months as well. But it's a very good group. You know, there's lots of people posting up questions, and there's lots of people give answers and all like that. It pretty much looks after itself. We moderate it. We won't allow spam. You know, there's we'll accept new members every. You know, I try and cover it every evening to make sure that I get everybody in, but sometimes it goes for a day or two. But it's a very good group. It's a great resource there for people to, you know, to check out.
Yeah, and it's people sharing tips and tricks for growing
And asking for recommendations and stuff like that.
Very good. So I think I've covered off everything. You've mentioned your website. We've spoke about your group, and I think we've given good information as to, you know, as to how somebody could go about choosing the correct greenhouse for them, whether it's, as I say, polytunnel glasshouse or polycarbonate house. So, Brendan, thank you very, very much for coming on Master My Garden podcast.
You're most welcome. It was a pleasure to do it.
So that's been this week's episode. Huge thanks to Brendan for coming on. I think we've kind of laid everything out there nice and simple. And it should give you the information that you need to choose the correct greenhouse for you. There's you know, there's lots of options out there, and, you know, as I say, just choose the one that works for you in your garden and what you're looking to do with it. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with all your gardening friends, and you can find me on the social channels. It's John Jones or Master My Garden on Instagram and Master My Garden on Facebook. So that's it. Thanks for listening, and until the next time, happy gardening.